Hi there, everyone. It's Tad Hargrave from Marketing for Hippies. It is 1 p.m. on August 9th, and this is the How to Tour teleseminar. So I'd love to give everyone a chance to introduce themselves briefly, just your name, what you do, and why you're here. So what is it that you're interested in touring? But let me just set something up first. All right, so if you go to the Facebook group, which hopefully you're logged into, you'll see at the very top it says, please introduce yourselves, name, what you do, and what you're wanting to tour. So let's just take a few minutes to give folks a chance to introduce themselves, and we will take it from there. So again, just comment below the please introduce yourselves. I'll keep all those. So if you're just joining, we're just introducing ourselves in the Facebook group. You'll see it says, please introduce yourselves, name what you do, and what you're wanting to tour. I'll just pin that to the top of the group. And you can just write a comment below that to introduce yourself. And thank you, Joseph, for your comment. All right, thank you, Laren and Buffy and Valerie and Tim. Let's give another minute or so. Of course, once you've introduced yourself, feel free to read other people's introductions because maybe there's a kindred spirit in the group. All right, I think almost everybody's commented. Great. Okay, everybody. That's wonderful. Okay, so let's dive in here. So, you know, I'm doing this call because I had so many of my friends over the years tell me, it's like, Dad, you've got this amazing lifestyle. You just travel around, you do these workshops, and I really never saw it as this amazing lifestyle. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was great, but I didn't think of it in that way. It was just doing workshops was how I made money, so I had to hustle and travel around, and, you know, so I just sort of figured out how to do it, but I wasn't doing it so that I could enjoy this, you know, laptop lifestyle or anything like that. And so my intention today is to give you a realistic sense of what's possible, you know, from the last decade of my experience. Before we get started, I want to invite you to, we're going to do questions at the very end because I'm probably going to answer a lot of the questions as we go through. But I would love to give you a couple of minutes right now just to sit down and really settle into what are the questions that you have that you're bringing to this. You know, if you could get these questions answered by the end of the call, you'd be satisfied. And at the end, hopefully, we'll have gotten most of them done. It will take a little more time to reflect at the end what other questions there might be. But I find it can also hone your listening to know what you're listening for. So I'd like to give everyone 2 minutes to just introduce yourselves. Or not introduce it, to think about what questions you have, yeah? So 2 minutes, just to reflect by yourself, you know, you can type it somewhere or write it somewhere, just get the list of questions, and then we will go with those questions in mind. Again, we won't post these questions in the group quite yet, just for you to have them in mind as we go through. All right. So with those questions in mind, let's dive in. So, yeah, my credibility on this is that I've toured for the last 10 years, on and off, sometimes with some really extended tours. I've also hosted a lot of people who come through town on tours, various musicians or performing artists, and have learned a lot from them. So I've just been around this whole world of touring and how do you make money on the road for quite a while. So I want to start with some reasons why to tour and then also some reasons why not to tour. So why to tour? Of course, one reason is to go to places you've always wanted to go to, you know, because there might be some country you've always wanted to visit or a city you've always wanted to visit, and if you could at least pay for your trip, that's not bad. You know, you set up a workshop, pay for the trip, and you just get to travel. So for some people, it's just that. They just want to make enough money to, you know, pay for the trip, maybe a little extra. Another reason to tour is, you know, there's that old adage in the Bible that says something like never a prophet in your own country, that, which is why musicians often have to tour, is that when you're a hometown talent, there's a certain level of, yeah, it's just that guy from down the street. We see him all the time. versus when you're in another community, you become a little bit of a B-grade celebrity. There's a bit more buzz about you because you're not going to be there forever. So it's a little more urgent, and because you're from outside of that town or country, you're a little exotic. So sometimes it's actually easier to get a following, you know, somewhere outside of where you live than where you live. And, of course, once you, you know, make it somewhere else, sometimes that transfers back, and there's even more love for you at home because they see, oh, they, you know, local person made good somewhere else. yeah, so there's a different level of cachet you're going to get in another place. Another reason is to meet new friends. You're going to meet really amazing people on the road. You know, some of them may end up becoming some of your best friends in the world. Also, I believe that the people you meet in person at workshops tend to be a bit more loyal around your work and better sources of word of mouth because they've had that in-person connection with you. And then the last reason is if you've got a solid back end of offerings, you know, for example, online courses or retreats or weekend workshops or coaching programs, things that you can offer to them after, then that's one of the major ways that you can make money on the touring is not so much just the money you make on the tour, but things you offer as support afterwards. I think of my friend Corin Raymond, who he recorded an album that was funded entirely with Canadian Tire money, and it became this big media story, and it's an amazing album called Paper Nickels. And then he wrote this play called The Great Canadian Tire Money Caper, where he told the story of the album, because it's such a good story. And, of course, he was selling his albums at the show. So every show, you know, he'd sell like 10 or 20 albums, and those albums were like $20 each. So he just, every show he did, made a lot more, whereas the other performers, the fringe, didn't necessarily have anything that they were selling afterwards. And so, you know, it's just another way to make money while you're touring. So why to tour? Those are some reasons. Why not to? This is some real talk about touring. It's expensive. You know, running online courses is far more profitable, ultimately, because there's just less expenses. When you're traveling, there are often accommodations you have to pay for, depending where you're going. You have to pay for the travel. You have to pay for the venue. If you're doing workbooks, you pay for those. And also, there's just ancillary things around eating out or taking more cabs than you would if you were at home. So it's an expensive endeavor to tour. I would never, if somebody was like, I want to make, you know, quick money, I don't know if I would necessarily recommend touring right away, depending on what it is, because you do make money, but it also costs money. A reason not to tour also is that it takes a lot more time than you'd think to set up a tour, promote it, you know, get buzz around it, develop a following. When it happens, it's very strong, but it often people think it's going to happen faster than it does. And there's no guarantees. You know, you could end up losing money on a tour. That happens. And so I want to make sure that I give you everything I can to make sure that does not happen for you. Another reason not to do it is the environmental impact, of course. You know, traveling these long distances, flights, you know, it's the planet takes a hit every time we do this. Another reason not to do it, it can be lonely. Being on the road, depending on how much you're on the road. It can be great. You're connecting with lots of people, but it can also have a lot of lonely moments in it where you're not surrounded with people, where, you know, and for some people that can be hard. If you're an introvert, touring can also be hard because sometimes you're surrounded by people more than you would like to be. Another reason not to tour is because when you tour, you, for me anyways, I notice it's very difficult for me to stay caught up on the rest of my work. And one of the guidelines I would offer you, or sort of a consideration, is that for every week you're away, there's probably about a week of catching up. At least in my experience, that's true. So if I'm away for 6 weeks, I mean, I'll do most of my catching up in the first 2 weeks, but it probably won't be until 6 weeks after that I'm really fully caught up on everything and feel just like back in the groove. So if you're traveling a lot, sometimes you can feel like you're just never, ever caught up, depending on your lifestyle, depending on the nature of your business. Another reason not to tour is because, you know, personally, I love being home. Touring is fun, but especially as I get older, I'm just enjoying not traveling. And, you know, this whole laptop lifestyle gets lauded as this, you know, incredible thing, but I think there's also a lot of poverty in it, and can lead people to suddenly have this lifestyle where there's actually, they have no roots anywhere in the world, which is troubling in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of reasons to tour. There's a lot of reasons not to tour. And so I want to move forward in this call holding both of those. Okay, so there's some helpful things to have walking into this conversation around tour and how to tour. The first thing is you've got to have, if you're going to tour something, you've got to have something worth touring. You know, that's a clear niche, a really good workshop, et cetera. You know, and I'm not, this call isn't focused on how to promote workshops as a whole. We'll talk about that. I'll answer any questions you have. That's something I answer more in the workbook that some of you got, The Art of the Full House. That's specifically around how to do the marketing for workshops and events. But one of the things I talk about in that, that's one of the very first things, is this question of niche and this question of, like, what are you doing? Because if somebody wants to tour a workshop and it's a really generic workshop, you know, it's like Success 101, you know, how to be healthier, wealthier, and wiser in your life, that's a hard thing to tour. If somebody's touring something much more specific, which I saw a lot of you had and what you were wanting to tour, it's going to be easier. So walking in, that's important. Also, it helps if you have a bit of a reputation. You know, if you're already known for being an authority on something, that's going to help. But the first thing we've got to look at in terms of touring is choosing where to go, choosing where to tour. And there are a lot of different considerations here. The first thing I want to suggest around selecting where to go is to pick three cities that you're going to focus on the most heavily. To start with three. It can be very tempting to want to just, you know, map out a whole route of North America and travel around. You can do it. It's so much work. Easier to pick three cities to go deep and not wide, because so much of touring, it's not about that first visit you do to a city. It's about the next one and the next one after that. It's the back end of it, you know. So it's good to ask yourself when you're looking at these cities, am I going to go back here? Is this the city I want to go to often that I would love to be spending time in? Or that seems like there's enough of a market to justify it. Because if a town is too small, you know, I was in the UK in this little town called Bentham, which is just outside of Lancaster, and I did my workshop. I had 25 people. It was packed. The room was totally full. And I looked around the room, and I realized that this was everybody in town who was going to be interested in my stuff. So if I had said, hey, I'm going to be coming back in a month to do a workshop, spread the word, tell your friends, they would have looked at each other and been like, this is it. We're all there is, really, basically. So, you know, I wouldn't probably want to have that be one of my three. I would suggest that for when you pick your top three cities, I'd pick larger ones, ones that have enough people that if you did a workshop, there would be other people they could tell, and hopefully a lot of other people. You know, so I found I do really well in cities like London, England, or Toronto, or Vancouver, Calgary, larger cities, because there's a back end, because there's going to be more people for them to tell after the workshop. And if you pick three cities and you go deep in those cities, it allows a lot of the other things we're going to be talking about in this call, namely developing relationships, figuring out who the hubs are, etc. And from there, you can grow. But that's one of the biggest things, takeaways I want you to get from this call. Pick three, focus there. And, of course, another way to pick it is where do you already have contacts? Because, I mean, yes, pick three. But the truth is, if you have a really solid contact and somebody who could bring you in and fill the room in a small town like Bentham or, you know, Red Deer, Alberta, and they could basically fill it for you, why not go there? You know, if you've already got somebody, a friend, family, colleague, somebody, a client on your list who just loves you and wants to bring you in, of course you could add that to the list. But I just wouldn't have that be one of the top three. I'd have that be an ancillary add-on. Another way to look at where to go is, you know, are there places you're going to be going to anyways? You've got family and friends you want to visit. You know, are there regular conferences you go to for work? And since you're there, you might as well tag on a workshop while you're there. I think that can make a ton of sense. You know, it's like my brother lives out in BC, and he's got his family there, and I want to visit them. So that means over the next little while, I'll probably do more workshops in Vancouver, because he's in the Sunshine Coast, so I'll do a workshop in Vancouver, you know, whenever I go out there, and then go up to the Sunshine Coast. So I can just add it on to the trip. Yeah. So I want to give everyone just a couple minutes right now to think about what would those top three cities be? And you can write other cities too, but just like what are the top three cities or towns that you imagine you'd want to tour in? So 2 minutes. All right, now you'll see at the very top, it says a comment below. What are the top three cities? So I'd love to see what you've come up with. Please put that as a comment below. All right, this is great. I don't see any overlap in the first three. One more minute for everyone to, in the Facebook group, it says comment below, what are the top three cities you'd imagine you'd like to go to on your tour? So you can put a comment below that with those top three cities. Wow, this is incredible. I really am not seeing, so far, any overlap. Oh, except LA has showed up a couple times. All right. Okay. Very good. So here's the thing. Just doing this is huge. Just making this decision of where you're going to focus has a massive impact, because so many people, when they're touring, there's no plan, there's no strategy around it, there's just this sort of hoping, you know, that it's going to work out, and it's this tour of all these places I want to go, and then sort of on a wing and a prayer hitting the road. So just having these three in mind allows us to actually do something and allows us to plan. Okay, so so with those questions you have in mind, with those three locations in mind, I want to talk about some of the truths about touring. The first one is that it gets easier every time. Every time you go back to a place, it will be easier and easier for you to do it because, number one, you'll know the venues, and for a certain period of time, you know, venues come and go, but you'll have a venue that works for you, and then that makes it easier because one of the hardest parts of touring is figuring out where you're going to do the workshop. And so you'll have that figured out. You're also going to know some of the contacts. You're going to have more hubs. You're going to have more of a reputation. People come. They like your workshop. And the next time you come back, they tell their friends. So every time you go back, it's easier. That's good to know. So I'm just a fan of this idea of not going to a city unless you would go back, unless, you know, unless again, there's somebody who's bringing you in this, making it really easier. In Toronto, you know, I'll ask people at the workshops, I'll say, raise your hand if you've heard about me multiple times. You know, first I say, raise your hand if you're here because somebody, you heard about this workshop from somebody you trust. Most of the hands go up. That's how almost everybody, 90% of the people heard about it. Then I say, raise your hand if you've heard about me multiple times, like from multiple people over the years, and the hands go up again, lots of hands. So this is what starts to happen when you really work a city, is the word gets out. And somebody will come and say, you know, five people have told me to come to this workshop. That makes your life easier. Another truth about touring is that there's a ramping up effect. So I'll tell you a story about what happened for me in Halifax, and this is good to consider. It's not always possible, but it's good to know that this is a dynamic, which is, so I was going to do a weekend workshop in Halifax. This was back in 2005. I was just out of college doing a Celtic studies program. And I'd been in Halifax, and there was a really lovely guy named Robert Weber, and he ran a place called the Yoga Loft. Most cities seem to have a place called the Yoga Loft. And beautiful yoga studio. He was such a great guy. And he said, I'd love to host a weekend workshop at my yoga studio. So we said, great. And we did a series of introduction workshops, like free two-hour workshops. And I did nine of those over a couple-week period. Well, we sold out the weekend within the first few intros because word got around. So then we thought, well, let's get a bigger venue. So we found a bigger venue with 40 seats. And we sold that out. And I still had more intros to go. By the time we got there, we'd sold out two weekend workshops with 40 people each. Yeah. And that was because of the ramping up. That's part of what builds the celebrity status. Like, you do an intro, and then they tell their friends, and, you know, hey, like, this guy's only in town for so long, you know. And so then they would tell their friends. They would come to my intro because they just heard about it 2 days ago. And then they knew there were some more coming up. And so there starts to be this, you know, escalating effect of it. And so staying in one place for a while can be useful. You know, if you're going to be touring and you want to be in a place for a month, if you have a weekend workshop at the end of it and you do a bunch of intros leading up to it, very effective. Another truth about touring is it's good to know, and I'm not even suggesting doing anything about this, but I think part of one of the reasons touring works as well for me as it does is because I'm talking about money and business. And so that's just classically one of those topics that people feel more comfortable spending money at, you know, when they know they're going to make more money. So when we're talking about business and money and all that, it just seems to be something that justifies. But that doesn't mean there aren't other hot-button issues around health, around relationships and sexuality, and also around spirituality that are extremely popular, and we can all think of people who do very well in those niches, you know. So let's talk about accommodations, because when you're traveling, there are, in my mind, sort of five main options you've got. The first is you can stay with friends when you're touring, and that's lovely. That's really wonderful. There are some really dear friends you have in those places, and if that's, in fact, one of the reasons you pick those cities and you get to stay with them, it's free. You know, and you get to connect with your friends. That's great. I found for myself sometimes on the road, I get so maxed out. And after the workshop, I actually need to do some work and just veg out. And sometimes if I'm staying with friends, then I feel like I need to be a good guest and hang out with them. And I had it once in Calgary where I had some friends and I'm staying with them, and I just barely talked to them. And they got really upset and offended, and which is understandable. But it had me realize, oh, you know, sometimes I just need my own place. So it's just, that's good to know. So you've got couch surfing, you know, which is a couchsurfing.com, which is a website where you can just find free places to stay. Again, that's, they may, you know, expect more interaction with you on that one, depending on the host. There's also a website called HomeAway. I believe it's homeaway.com. I've never actually used it, but this is one of these ones where it's for a little bit of a longer stay where people will sort of lease out their home. Yeah, it's called homeaway.com. It's similar to Airbnb, which is another option you can look at when you're traveling. And, of course, there's hotels and motels and all of that, and some of those can be affordable. You could also stay in hostels. And I personally don't want to stay in a room with a bunch of other smelly people, so I will stay usually in a private room. And hostels are great because they're often very central, and they're often a lot more affordable. Even a private room in a hostel is a lot more affordable than a hotel or motel. So those are some options of where you can stay. When we're talking about the venue, this is the other consideration. I want to suggest some criteria. These are criteria that I use for venues, but you're going to have to sort of figure it out for your own, events. Because sometimes you'll just be brought in, they're going to tell you what the venue is, and that's great. It's good to know the venue. Do you have exclusive use? Because, I've been to some venues where I went, oh, man, one in Calgary is a weekend workshop, and I was so mad. Because they showed these photos of it, but, they used the wide lens. It just looks a lot bigger than it was. And it was really actually just this big alcove in a hallway at a holistic center. And so I was there, and we had tables set up, and there was enough room. But, it was like just every once in a while, people would be walking by in the hallway or talking, a patient being let in. And the whole thing felt so weird. I've done workshops in cafes where it was like there's a cafe over there, and I'm trying to do a workshop, and it's just so you want to have exclusive use. That's one thing. Natural light, I think, is a good thing. So these are all questions when you're looking at venues, things that it can be easy to forget. Natural light is really wonderful because otherwise you can be in these rooms that just it's all fluorescent lights and it's brutal. Of course, affordable is one of the questions I have. Do they have chairs, tables, flip charts? I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a venue and I forgot to ask if they had a flip chart. I sort of assumed that they would, or that they'd have markers, or assumed that they had tables or chairs. And some venues are like, oh, no, we don't have any chairs. No, yeah, people usually bring them. Or, yeah, we've got these yoga mats or, bolsters people can sit on. So it's good to check in with the venues about these things. Like whatever it is that you need to make sure you're either bringing it or to make sure and double check that they have it. It's good for a venue to be central. If your venue is just way on the outside of town, you're going to lose people. There are going to be people who just look at it and say, oh, my God, it's so far. I can't be bothered. So central is good. Having parking available, or at least that people know what the parking situation is. And then how close is it to food? Because if you're going to be taking meal breaks, if you're not catering it, if you're not feeding people, and if it's a day-long or a weekend thing, if it's really far from food, that means your lunch breaks are probably going to need to be like 2 hours long. And speaking about lunch breaks, I'll just throw this in. Unless the food is right next door, like literally across the street, and it's a place that is guaranteed to be quick, you're going to want to have 90 minutes for lunch. I've tried to do – if they're packing in their own lunch – and you can tell people, by the way, bring your own lunch. It's going to be 45-minute lunch, and that's fine. That can work too. But if people are going out to eat, you are now looking at 90 minutes. I've tried to do it faster in a bunch of times. But people, it's like it takes long to get the bill, the meal's late, they take a while finding a restaurant, et cetera. And all of a sudden, half the people are back in an hour, and the other are back half an hour later, and you kind of have to wait, or it just messes up with the flow of the workshop. So I would suggest a 90-minute lunch hour if it's a day-long or weekend workshop where they're not bringing food in. Yeah, and so that leads us to the three types of workshops that you can do, basically. There's like kind of a shorter workshop that you could do just in an afternoon or morning or an afternoon or an evening, but it's like a 2 or 3 hour thing. There's your day-long workshop with a 90-minute lunch, and then there's a weekend workshop. Those are the three types primarily that, it seems that you can do. And so it's good to know, which one you're doing, which one works best. There are some things that work really well in the intro and don't work well in the day long. I just wrote a book called Point of View Marketing. And so I did a workshop called Point of View Marketing. And I just did it. I've done it 4 times now. And after the 4th one in Calgary, I realized I'm never doing this again as a day-long workshop. Because it works well as like a 90-minute, I could talk about it. And it works well as a 30-day program, which I've done, which I think some of you were in, and that worked well. But doing it as a day-long thing was like long enough to kind of open something up, but not long enough to do it. I was talking with Stephen Jenkinson, who's been doing a lot of touring lately. He runs at orphanwisdomschool.com or orphanwisdom.com. And he had a similar experience where he, loves doing talks. He'll do an evening, 2-3 hours, or he'll do 5-day things, or even weekend things, but one day is like enough to kind of open stuff up, but not enough to close it. So he does not enjoy doing the day-longs, you know, as much as other formats. And so you may find, so I find for the Marketing 101, for Marketing for Hippies 101 workshop, that one, I crush it in a day. I could do a two-hour version of it, but doing a day-long is, like, perfect for me. And, you know, so some workshops are going to work well for that, and some workshops won't. And some workshops, it's like some of it, it works well for a weekend, but it'd be very hard to do in an intro to really meaningfully get into it, you know. Yeah, so it's good to know which type. And it's good to also talk about the different visits you're going to have. So I want to talk about the first three visits and what you're trying to accomplish in each visit. And this is going to start moving into some of the strategy around this. So the first visit to a town, if you've never been there before, to me, this is the planting seeds visit. I wouldn't expect this visit to be the most profitable. I would expect the first visit to a city to be the hardest one to do. And if you've toured before, you know this is true. But one of the major things you're doing in your first visit to a town is you're identifying who the hubs are. Hubs meaning people who are very well connected, very well respected. You're identifying the Facebook groups that people participate in, the hashtags. You're really starting to identify in this town, where do I find my ideal clients? Who's already connected to them? Where do they hang out? The question to ask yourself is, in this town, where do those people spend their time, their money, or their attention? Your first visit to a town is really dedicated to answering those questions. Because the first time you go to a town, you may have some idea who the hubs are, but you don't really know. So there's a process of asking around, you know. So if somebody's bringing you in, it's good to just sit down with them and say, would you be willing to take half an hour with me and just go over who should I talk to in this town? Who do I reach out to? Who's, you know, who are the hubs? In my intro workshops on the feedback form at the end, I ask people, who are the hubs? What are the hubs? Where would I find people in this town? You know, and then I'll collect those. So that's the first thing you're doing in your first visit. You're identifying the hubs, and if you can, you want to have some coffee dates with some of those hubs. You want to connect with them in person if there's time that you know, you're allowed to get together one-on-one with some of the more significant ones. The first visit, in my mind, you're also doing a lot of intros. Unless you have somebody who's hosting you who can guarantee, like, pack a weekend, I would just do a bunch of intros that build up to a you know, a larger program when you come back. Or if you've got a coaching program and that's what you're selling at it, that's great. You know, and you can do these out of people's living rooms if you need to. So, you know, if you're doing a book tour, this would be the kind of thing, just doing a lot of readings all over the place. And, of course, if you can get one big one that gets everyone, I would do that. But in the absence, doing a lot of intros can work really well. In the second visit, to me, this is like tending the garden. One of the major things you're going to want to do in the second one is to host a party. And this is something I'm probably going to write, I will write an ebook about at some point, but this idea of parties as marketing. This has so many benefits. I could really talk for a couple hours on this topic. But basically, the first time you go to a city, you could not host a party. You don't know enough people, right? But the second time you come back, you could host a party where you invite all the people who you've discovered are hubs, and you can invite all the people who've gone through your workshops in the past who you connected with. And you can invite everyone, by the way, or something you can do is during your workshops is you can just notice who you resonate with, and you've got the attendance list, and you just circle the names of the people who you're like, I really want to spend more time with this person. I want to get to know this person better, you know. And then those are the people you invite to the party. So when I went to London, England the first time, I didn't really know anybody there. Or not a lot of people, not enough. I had like 100 people on my email list. But so I emailed them and I said, hey, I'm thinking about coming to the UK. Would anyone be down to host me? And a fellow named Saul reached out. And he said, and he had this impressive resume of all these events he promoted. And he said, look, why don't we just do a 50-50 split? And so he arranged, I think it was a weekend workshop, or two-day workshop. And he, true to his word, he got a lot of people there. And so 50-50 split on. We just, I normally do pay what you can, but because of that, I just charged £99, and so, you know, he got £50, I got £50 from everyone who came, easy. Of course, in that visit, I met a lot of people, and I kept track, and I, you know, figured who the hubs were. I started to ask around, And so the next time I came back, I put out the word to, hey, does anyone have a venue or a pad where we could host a party? And a really lovely fellow reached out, and he said, yeah, you could use it. We've got a great loft you could use. And it could, you know, could fit about 40. And so I spread the word. And I invited a lot of my favorite past clients and people I'd met. And we had this gathering. And so at the party, what you want to do is it's a networking event. It's, you're trying to connect people to each other. And so we, you know, mingled for a bit. You know, I think it started around maybe 6:30, but around 8 o'clock or 8:30, we all – and I catered it, by the way. You know, I had food brought in. I think Jazz, the fellow who was hosting it, he catered it. So there was food there. And this is a good use of money, by the way, in marketing, catering a sweet thing. You know, you could do it as a you could do it as a potluck if you know the people well enough. But I think catering it is fine. So brought people together. Around 8:30, we all got in a circle, and everyone had a minute to introduce themselves to the group. And there were about 30 people. So everyone had 1 minute to introduce themselves, and then we just mingled. That was the whole structure of the evening. Now, I didn't have to talk about myself. I didn't stand up and say, so I'm Chad from Marketing for Hippies from Canada, and let me tell a talk for 10 minutes about myself and how great I am and my workshops that are coming up. I didn't. I just took the – I played host, and I welcomed everybody and thanked, you know, Jazz for letting us use his place and acknowledge some of the sort of guests of honor in the room. There's a fellow who's there from the States who was, you know, who himself had a workshop coming up, so I gave him a shout-out. And then I just used my minute like everyone else. I said, yeah, my name's Todd Hargrove. I'm here, you know, do these workshops. I've got a weekend workshop coming up, Pay What You Can, marketing workshop. And, it's, you know, good to be here, and here's what it's about. I just took my minute. And then everyone else introduced themselves. And then I got 4 people to sign up for my weekend workshop with the incredibly heavy pressure tactic of just saying, hey, are you coming to my weekend workshop? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, well, you should come. It's Pay What You Can. You should come. I like you. You're great. I want you at my weekend. And 4 people were just like, yeah, okay. And they signed up and decided to come. But the other thing that happens is imagine what the first words are out of everyone's mouth when they meet each other at that party, because I'm the host. So the first words out of everyone's mouth are, so how do you know Tad? And consider the dynamic of this. Half the people in that group are past people who've gone to my workshop in the past, have been on my email list, or just people who, you know, I've got a connection with. And the other half are hubs. The other half are people who could be really good connections for me. And they're being talked up all night to these hubs by the people who are at the party. And then when they go to leave, these hubs, who I've talked to for maybe 2 minutes the whole night, because, you know, so many people, they would just shake my hand and say, hey, next time you're in town, let me know, and I'll spread the word. Boom. So you see where this becomes really valuable. The parties are also so useful because, you know, unless you keep going back with higher-level workshops, people aren't going to come back to the same workshop again. You know, it's very rare that they would do that. But if you have a party, you can stay in touch with them, and especially the clients, the people who you've met on the road that you like the most, it gives you a way to stay connected with them, to reconnect with them again. And then when you reach out, you know, to the hubs, and we'll get more into this in a bit, to ask them to spread the word, you can be like, hey, I've got this workshop coming up. I was wondering if you could help spread the word. And, by the way, there's a party coming up in this date, and I'd love for you to be there, which warms up that email considerably. So, you know, the first time you could do a weekend workshop, but the first time you go to a town, you might just want to do intros. Second time, you can host a party, and then you can do a full weekend because now you've been exposed to a lot of people. You've connected with some hubs. The hubs have a good feeling about you, you know. And people have maybe been on your email list now or been following you on social media. You've got a deeper reputation there. The third visit, if the first visit is planting seeds and the second visit is tending to the garden, the third visit is kind of enjoying the fruits of your labors. I would do fewer intros but bigger ones because at this point you've got more hubs. So instead of doing a lot of little ones, you can do, you know, 2 or 3 much larger ones hosted by bigger hubs. Again, I would host a party. You'd probably want to host a weekend, and again, coffee dates with hubs, you know, throughout. So those are that's my sense. So I don't look at touring as like just go to one town, then another town, then another town, then another town, where it's always the first time that's so hard. And if you're thinking about touring that way, I invite you to change your mind on that because it's much more difficult. So that's my sense of the first three visits. So what I want to do is pause right now, and just you don't have to write, please don't write this in the group, but I just want to give everyone a minute to let this sink in and just take any notes or scratch down any thoughts that you have just by yourself, not in the group. All right, so just take 1 minute by yourself to absorb a little bit. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what you do. Valerie was asking, I would do a weekend workshop on the second visit. I mean, you could on the first if you've got enough of a following. But if I were going to be a little conservative, I'd say the first one, just do intros in your first visit to a town. And the second one, then you might want to do a weekend. I would try to on the second visit, but certainly on the third. And Aaron was wondering about the three types of workshops. Just basically like, you know, you've got your 2 to 3 hour workshop, you've got a day-long workshop, or you have a weekend workshop of some kind, or a retreat, a much longer one. Okay, so let's talk about what you do during the workshops, because there are two things that I think are very useful to have during the workshops. So one is to make sure that you've got some sort of a feedback card. And the feedback card, you've really got to come up with this one on your own. But I can tell you what I've done. And I've changed it over the years. So obviously you want to have a space for their contact info, their name, their, and also the date and city that it's in. Because otherwise you can get a lot of these forms, little pieces of paper mixed up with each other. And it's good to know what people are from what city. The other thing you want to have is a place, I would ask them who told you about the workshop and have a space where they could write that, because that's really important to know how they heard about it, who told them. I tend to write who instead of just how, because if you say how, they'll say from a friend, but who, you might actually get the name of the person. Because you may find like, wow, a lot of the people are coming from this person. And sometimes you don't even know who that person is. You've never heard of them. It can happen. Another question I'll ask on the feedback form is who or what are the best hubs for my next visit? So I, of course, in my workshop, I'm talking about hubs all the time, so you may need to explain that a bit. But, just basically like, where do I promote next time I come here? Where's the best place to put a poster? Are there Facebook groups I should be plugging, or email lists that would be really good for me to be able to reach out to? And then the third question I think is really important is, what are you most craving help with for the next steps from this workshop? Because that they're going to tell you what the next workshop should be. They're going to give you the insights that you need there. And then I would also include, follow-up. So for mine, I'll say there's four things they can check. One is I'm interested in your weekend workshop coming up. So I'm thinking about the tour I'm about to do in Ontario. So it's like $100 deposit plus pay what you can for that. I'm interested in your online 6-week marketing for hippies program. So that's $200. I'm interested in your online 6-month coaching program that I'm going to be starting in the new year by application, which will be $500 a month. Or I'm interested in one-on-one coaching, $300 an hour. And so they check one of those boxes, or none of them, and it's fine. But then they give you permission to follow up with them. And, of course, you can get them to sign up right there at the workshop. It's ideal. They could pay right there. It's a little trickier with me because I do pay what you can, so then there's suddenly two payments. Some people will do things where they'll say, if you sign up for the weekend now, we'll just include the payment of this in and you'll get a discount. You can do that if you'd like. Different people have different thoughts about it. But it's good to be sure you get who they heard about the workshop from, the best hubs for the next one, and what are they craving help with. Those are things I would tend to look at in terms of the feedback form. And make sure you give yourself time, because it's so classic in these workshops to run out of time at the end, because we want to keep giving. So to make sure that people have a solid 5 minutes to fill this out, 5 minutes just for that, not the 5 minutes at the end of the workshop. But, give yourself some breathing room at the end so that you can get this information from them. So it's good to have that kind of a form. Something, because, it's so easy when you're touring to do a workshop and then there's no possible follow-up with these people. Yeah. And some people, it's amazing because I'll leave a workshop and it wouldn't have occurred to me they might want to keep working with me. And then like half of them say, yeah, I'd like to do your marketing 101 for Hippies program coming up, that $200 one. And it's like, wow, I wouldn't have thought. But then those are some very warm leads to approach around that. And the other one, again, I mentioned it before, it's good to have the list of names printed out or written out. And sometimes, if you have people introduce themselves at the beginning of the workshop, you can just write them down as they're talking. But then circle the names of the people you feel the most connection with, because those are people who could be really good hubs for you. And they're also the people who you most want to work with. And why not, sometimes I'll send those people an email after the workshop or after the tour and say, hey, you were some of my favorite. This is an email on my BCC, so they don't see who it is. I said, I just want you to know you were some of my favorite people in the workshop. I really enjoyed meeting you. Or you can send them a personal one, but, and I'd really love to have you at the future workshop. It's just good to know that when you come back to the town, you've got that list of folks. Speaking of lists, databases and lists are so much of where it's at. The person with the best database in touring wins. This is something I see so many musicians just totally screw up on, is they don't have any form of database or list. And it's really important. So one of the first things you want to do, and in fact, I would invite everyone to do this right now, if you know how to use Google Spreadsheets, I would create a Google Spreadsheet right now as we're talking, a new one, and I would create a tab for those top three cities. You can start with this. Eventually, you might want to have a separate spreadsheet for each city. But, to start with, you can just have one tab for each city. So you can have a Google spreadsheet. You could have a spreadsheet also on your laptop, an Excel document. But you want to have a place where you can keep track of who the hubs are. So this is what I call a hubs database. And it's really vital in touring. Then you've also, of course, you've got your email list. Just, the general email list that people sign up on your website or people might sign up on when they sign up for your workshop. So there's the kind of email list for participants that you're going to use MailChimp or Constant Contact or whatever you use. There are also going to be Facebook or Twitter lists, and then there's a texting list. So there's four kinds of lists. There's your Hubs database. There's just your email list. There's the Facebook, Twitter, social media lists, and then there's a texting list, four different types. Having the person who has these the best organized is going to have the best time touring. So let's actually start with the email list, because that's the easiest. So the email list is something you already have, I hope. Again, this is just the people you send your newsletters to. But depending on the provider you have, when people enter their email, you can also, and a lot of them set it up where they enter where they live, their city and their state, their country, zip code, postal code. You can get those things entered. that's really useful to do. And I would recommend just making that mandatory on your email list. Because what that allows you to do is to start to segment your email list. So, for example, just this morning or yesterday, I sent out an email to everyone in Ontario. So what happens is I went into Constant Contact. I exported my whole email list of like 10,000 or so as a CSV file. And by the way, if this is all confusing for you, there's a teenager in your life who understands what this is. But I exported it. And I just went through and I organized it. It's a spreadsheet. I put it, you know, opened it as a spreadsheet. And then I just organized it by province. I found everyone in Ontario, got all those email lists, and I created a new email list, my Ontario email list, in Constant Contact. Yeah. So you can do it by city. And so you should have one for every city that you're going to be doing major tours in. And, you know, just before you start to promote that tour, you can go through that. You can export the thing. Just update that list. Is very handy because you're going to have new people joining, hopefully, all the time on your email list. So this kind of segmented email list means that, I mean, yes, announce the tour to your whole list, of course, but then we are going to do follow-up instead of bothering people, you know, me bothering people who live in China, you know, and badgering them about my tour in Ontario, I just start to email the Ontario list more. And people in BC, they're not getting all those reminders. So that's the first thing, segmenting your email list. Dividing it up. And if your email list doesn't have that, some of the heavy lifting you could do is you could send out an email to your whole list and say, hey, do any of you live in these three cities? If you do, please click reply and let me know. Or much easier than that, you can actually, in a lot of these email services, create buttons. And most of these email services, by the way, have great support, meaning you can chat, do chat support, you can call them. You can email them. There's a lot of good videos on them that can help you figure out how to do this stuff. But what you could do is you could create a button, you know, three different buttons. So, like, one could be Calgary, Toronto, Vancouver, and you put those in an email and you say, hey, if you live in one of these cities, would you click this button and add yourself to the email list, and I'll keep you posted when I come to your town. And then people will automatically just join that email list directly. I hope that all makes sense. So, and again, if you have questions as we're going through, just write them down. We will get to them at the end. The second one I want to talk about are Facebook and Twitter lists. And this is the hardest one because Facebook keeps changing its deal all the time. But one of the things a lot of people still don't know about in Facebook is that you can create these friends lists. So if you go to, like, you're in the group right now. hopefully you're not on your phone, but if you're on your laptop, if you go to the left side of the page, you'll see it says at the very top has your name, the edit profile, then favorites there, pages, and then it says friends. So if you click on that word friends, it'll take you to another page where it's like facebook.com/bookmarks/lists. And you'll see at the top says create list or see all friends. So you can create a list in Facebook and add people to it. So, you know, if I want to create one, I'd say maybe a list for how to tour, you know, and then you can start to add members into it. So that's the first thing, just the fact that you can create these lists. So I've got lists for Toronto, for Vancouver, for Victoria, for most of the cities, any city I tour in, I've got a list for it because people are going to add you. And here's something to know about Facebook. So there's a limit of 5,000 people that you can have. That's friends, and so most people aren't close to that. I've hit it a couple times, and so there's a certain point where you can just add everybody, anyone who comes to your workshop, you can add them, and that will max out. The people you do want to add 100% on Facebook are the hubs. Anyone you meet who's a connector, who's a mover and shaker, or who are your favorite clients, these are the people to add and put them in these friends groups. So how do you add the people to the friends groups? Well, you can type in their name, and so that can just take a while to do, but it's worth it, frankly, to just have one tab open where you see all your friends, which you can do, by the way, when you go to the create list and it says see all friends. You can click that, and then you'll just see everybody. And you can go through one by one. But so, yeah, if you do click see all friends, you know, on the where it says create list or see all friends, if you click see all friends, you'll see this list. And you'll see there's the, you know, so I've got my friend Ruben Anderson, and it says friends with a little check mark. And if you hover your cursor above that, it'll say get notifications, close friends, acquaintance, add to another list, suggest friends or unfriend. So that add to another list, that's where you add them. So if you click on that, any of the lists that you have would suddenly appear, and you could add them to as many of the lists as you want. The benefit here, what I suggest doing is you set up all these lists now. You know, and if you, it's worth it, honestly, going through your whole Facebook, all the friends, and just adding everyone to every single list that would be relevant to them, or that's relevant to your touring anyways. So you may skip some people because they don't live anywhere near there. But just doing that, so big, because then that means you've got a few hundred people possibly on every list. But then, this is the gold of it, is when you meet somebody and you add them on Facebook, you can automatically add them to a new list. So, you know, if you click on somebody's name, you know, go to a friend's page, their profile, and it'll have their name, it'll have that big little profile picture, and then the banner. And then again, it says friends, following, message, those little three dots. So the where it says friends, again, you'll see it says get notifications, close friends, acquaintances, add to another list, suggest friends or unfriend. So you can add them there. So when somebody adds you or you add somebody on Facebook and you become friends, you just that becomes the twitch. You automatically throw them in one of these lists. This is so huge. I'm just like giving you so much money in this one tip. I can't even begin to tell you how much easier this makes your life. Because once you've got these lists, if you want to invite people to an event, you can invite them from these lists. And Facebook is getting a lot more persnickety about inviting everybody to every event. And it's the worst. People invite you to events in cities that you're not in. So if you have these lists organized, then if you, you know, so let's say if you click, if you just go to the main homepage for Facebook, you click on that little F in the upper left corner. You'll see it says events. And scroll, you know, there's your name, edit profile, newsfeed, ads, manager, messages, and click on events. Look, just click on the first event there. And then where it says share or invite people, you can click choose friends. And under choose friends, on the left-hand side, you will see all of the friends lists that you've created. And then you can select one of those lists. And then you can click select all. Or there's also an app that you can use in Google Chrome that's called Invite All. And there's a few of these, and you may experiment. Sometimes these come and go, but it looks like a little check mark, basically. And it's called Invite All. It's an app in Google Chrome. so what happens is if the list is too big, because I think it maxes out at 150, the Facebook Invite All function. But if it's bigger than that, you can just click that one check mark in the up in Chrome, and it will invite everybody all at once. All right, so I'm going to pause because I saw a couple comments in the group. Okay, so regarding the friends list again, if you just look on the left-hand side of your page, and you may need to click the F in the corner to just go back to the homepage, but it should be there, you'll see there's all those little things on the left-hand side. It says, you know, your name, edit profile, there's favorites as a heading, there's pages as a heading, then it says friends and groups and apps and interests. So where it says friends, that's where you click, and then you'll see at the top, create list or see all friends. Okay, so I hope that helps. So creating the Facebook friends list is so big because as you're touring, it just means that those lists are constantly growing just automatically. You add somebody on Facebook and you then put them in the right lists and you move on, you know. So you could have a list like Toronto clients, Toronto hubs, for example. And that means then also, So let's say you wanted to just look at all those groups. So you could click Friends on the left-hand side, and you'll just see all those lists. And then you could just, if you click that, so let's say I click, I've got Edmonton Yogis is one of them. I'll see I've got 55 people on that list. On the right-hand side of the top, it says on this list, 55. Then you can click See All. And it'll show you everyone is on that list. And now if you're touring, that's really handy. Because now you can just see who all these hubs are, and you may decide to personally reach out to some of them. You know, it just reminds you the resources that you have. All right, so it sounds like some of you may have different screens, possibly because of a different browser. I'm not sure. So luckily there's a recording of this, so you're going to be able to go over this. But the things you want to look for, number one, you can Google this, by the way, how to create Facebook friends lists, and there are tons of tutorials on this as well, if you get totally lost or if your screen is just totally different. But number two is the select all thing. So if you go to the if you just type Google Chrome App Store in Google, if you search Google Chrome App Store, Facebook select all, you'll see the app start to show up, and then it'll then or invite all. It'll guide you through the process of installing it and using it. So yeah, let's just pause there. Are there any questions? Let me just see. One second. I can't even begin to tell you how useful these friends lists are. You know, and I did it. I finally sat down one time and I went through all my friends. It took me hours to do it. But everyone was suddenly in a list. And multiple lists, and that made my promotion so much easier. It made spreading the word about certain things so much easier. You know, I've got this Edmonton Yogis list, so when there are yoga events, I can just invite those people and spread the word. You know, makes it a lot easier. So are there any questions about this? So I posted it. It's at the very top of the group. So if you have any questions about this, you can just comment beneath that post. Take a minute, see if there's any questions. These Facebook lists have multiple advantages. One is you can invite people to events in a very targeted way. But number two, let's say, you know, I'm posting about, oh, this workshop's coming up. You can then be like, who should I tag, you know, just like, let's say, in a comment beneath to draw their attention to it. Who should I tag underneath? And you can go to that friends list, oh, right, all these people. And then you tag those people and ask them to spread the word about the workshop. It makes it easier. Or, you know, the Edmonton Fringe is starting tomorrow night. And a big, huge theater festival we have in town. And my friends Amy Shostak and Tom Hill are staying with me. They're improvisers and sketch comedy folks, and they're in town doing their shows. And Amy was looking at her ticket sales and saying, oh, God, this is really low. And so I said, well, you know, what I do, she said, maybe we should do a Facebook ad. I said, better would be to send a message to everybody who you know in Edmonton with a pre-written Facebook post and to ask them to spread the word in some pre-written tweets. Yeah. And so they did that. And I helped them out because I know folks in Edmonton. We sat down. They came up with like 80 people to send a message to. But if you've already got that list, it's much easier to find who those names are and not forget them. Be like, oh, why didn't I message this person? Yeah. So you could send them all a group message just by adding them individually into that thread, or you could send them individual messages. It's up to you. Yeah. So Victoria was asking, are you saying you can set up these Facebook friends lists based on location or interest too? Yeah, you can set them up for anything you want. So I've got some a friends list around Gaelic. You know, I've got friends lists for people I went to high school with, people I went to elementary school with. So you can set up all these different kinds of groups for personal and professional things. But yeah, for touring, good to have one for like hubs, good to have one for just participants, you know. Good to have one for friends for that town, you know. And people can be in multiple lists. But this is so handy, so handy. Okay, so let's talk about Twitter, because Twitter has a similar thing. So if you don't have Twitter, ignore this part. But if you do, if you go to your log into your Twitter profile, and at the top of the screen, you know, it says home, moments, notifications, messages, and you got the little Twitter bird in the middle, then the search bar, and then your picture where it says, if you hover the cursor over it, it says profile and settings. And if you click on that, you'll see lists. It says, you know, mine, it says Tad Hargrave view profile or lists. So if you click that, you'll see that you can create all these lists. And on the right-hand side, it says create a list. A list is a curated group of Twitter users and a great way to organize your interests. So you can click on that and create new lists. And then you just add people, you know, and it'll help, I think, even suggest people that you could add based on who you're adding. And you can create these lists. And what that means is, and this is also true for the Facebook friends list, by the way, is, so let me, I'm just going to actually log into a different Twitter account here. Okay, so I go to lists, and I can see I've got one list under my at Tad Hargrave Twitter account where it says cool marketing content, and there's 80 members underneath it. So if I click, it's in green here, I click it. Then I see this, first of all, at the top it says cool marketing content, a public list by Tad Hargrave. It says members, 80, subscribers, 0, so which is fine. I don't care if there's any subscribers, but members, there's 80. So if I click on that, it'll show me here's all the people who I'm following on that list. But also in the middle column here, it says tweets. And so these are only tweets from those 80 people. No other tweets show up. This isn't just like following Twitter at random. This is showing me only those from those 80 people, not everyone I'm following on Twitter. So that's very useful, because that's also what happens with the friends lists on Facebook. So, you know, if you go to this friends area, and I click on one of them, so again, the Edmonton Yogis list, it'll show me a news feed, but the only people in that news feed are the folks in that list. So what does that mean in terms of, for both Twitter or Facebook, in terms of touring? Well, let's say there are these three cities that you really want to deepen your connections in, and you create a list of the hubs, you know, and maybe it's hubs and favorite clients together, however you want to do it, for that city. What that means is you could take, let's say, 30 minutes to an hour every week or just even every month and go to that list, and you just put this in your calendar or put this in your whatever system for to-dos you have, which we'll talk about in a minute, and you could just go through it and like some other things and comment on it and share some other stuff. And it's a way of kind of staying in touch and staying top of mind with some of these people who live really far away, who you might kind of get lost in your the larger news feed. But so you can focus on these three cities and just, yeah, even once a month, take an hour and just go through the news feed, catch up on things. And it also, by the way, lets you know what's happening in these people's lives, which is nice, because then you can, just a little more intimate, another way to stay in touch that doesn't take a ton of time. So you can do that with Twitter, and you can do that with Facebook. Again, you can look at the Twitter feed of just those people on the list or the Facebook feed of just the people on those lists. And this is not super difficult. I mean, because if you're already using Twitter or Facebook, it's just a matter of when you add somebody, making sure you add them to the right list in that moment, and do it right then. Don't wait, because you will forget after. Just add them automatically. Okay, so we've talked about your email list. We've talked about Facebook or social media lists, and there's also, LinkedIn and other things which I don't use as much. So let's talk then about the texting list. Oh, man. And then we'll talk about the hubs list last because that's probably the most important. But the texting list. So this is an optional one. This is something I use. Honestly, this is something I did not include in my ebook, the How to Promote Events, even though I use it to great effect. But it's a little tricky because I don't know what kind of computer you have or what kind of phone you have. But so let me just, I'll say this. There are ways, so I have a Mac, and I just have the contacts, the simple contact things that comes with the computer, and that's where all my contacts go. And in that, you can create a new group. You know, if I have somebody's name selected, there's a little plus sign at the bottom of the page. It's like there's all the names, then there's their little card there. And if I click that plus, it says new contact or new group. And so you can create groups here too. And these are so useful. So I use this mostly for promoting the potlucks that I do. I do a monthly potluck in town, and that's how I promote it, is I text people. What's really critical is people's cell phones are very sacred, so nobody gets added to this texting list unless you're, really close friends with them, and, you know, they wouldn't mind. Or they've given you permission, which they do in the case of the potlucks. So it's just one of those things that when you got their cell phone number, if you meet somebody, say, hey, give me your cell phone. I'll text you next time I'm in town just to make sure you know. Or next time I'm having a party, I'll text you. And then you add them into that friends list. And there's a way, at least on my iPhone, that I can actually on the iPhone select that list. And the way that I do that is I go to contacts on my iPhone. And at the very top says groups, all contacts or plus. I click groups. And I'll say hide all contacts. And there's this list that shows up, which you won't have if you don't have any groups. But then I can select, just a little check mark, which list I want. I'll click done. And then the contacts it'll show me are just the contacts that are in that particular group. And then when I click add, the little plus sign to add them, you know, like when you want to get somebody's number, let me add you. It'll add them directly into that group. So this is what I do when I meet people and I say, hey, you want to hear about the potlucks? Yeah, totally. I just open my potluck invite group and I click, add a person. I let them add it. And it's important that their phone number, by the way, is listed as a mobile or cell number, not a home number, because there's certain texting programs, which I'll talk about in a second, which will not text it if it's a home number, if it's listed as that. So I'll do that. And then there's a number of group texting apps, and I think they're different, honestly, for Android or iPhone. So it depends which one you have. But if you search mass text, you'll see a number of them come up, and you just have to kind of find the best one. The one that I use is called Group Text, and it works really well. The app is sort of self-explanatory once you get it, and there's a number of different apps, so I won't go through it. But what this means is if there are certain key people, you can text them as another way to reach them, because not everybody checks their Facebook messages, not everyone checks their emails, and most people ignore Facebook events. Right? So, and some people are just swamped with emails, and so what are you going to do? So texting is a way that you can do it. And again, I would use this with extreme caution. But if it's a list of people who are all like, yeah, they'd be totally cool with me texting, they've either given me permission or we're like super old friends, then you can send a text to them. And that text could be like, hey, I'm having a party this night. Can you make it? Or, if you feel comfortable with it, you could say, hey, I've got some, I'm coming to town with some workshops. I could use some help promoting. Can you lend a hand? And they'll reply, yeah, sure. Send me some info. Great. Where do I send it? And you can arrange it in that way. So I don't use this, honestly, as much for the touring, but it's something I could imagine using more moving forward. It's just be cautious with it because, too many texts promoting stuff, of course, is no good. The last list, the most important one, is the Hubs database. So I'd ask you to open up a spreadsheet and create a tab for each of the cities. The idea here is you would create a list of all the hubs that you know of for each of those cities. This is just so useful. So I'm on a tour, and I am way behind. Speaking of touring, I'm promoting it because I had a friend who was struggling and suicidal a couple of weeks ago. And so that just really subsumed my life, arranging a support network for him. And, yeah, if you've been there, you know. So I'm just behind is the truth on organizing this tour. And so, you know, you can email your list so much, but it's not going to have that much more of an impact. So then what do you do? Well, these are where the hubs come in. So I went to my hubs list for Toronto, because that's the first one coming up. I've got a workshop there on Friday, and it's like there are like four or five people signed up, and I would like to have more than that at the workshop. And so I sent emails out to the hubs, some of the people who I was like, okay, I feel comfortable just sending them a direct email, asking their help individually, not as a whole group. Though you can do that too, but you'll get less of a response. But I asked them individually, hey, I've got this workshop coming up. Can you help spread the word? If they reply, I gave them the info to share. You can just send a mass text or mass email again to those people. You will just get less of a response to a mass email. If it's a personalized email, you'll get 10 times the response. That's just how it is. But this hubs list is huge. So during the workshop, you know, when somebody mentions, oh, yeah, this would be a great hub for you, you write it down. When they hand in the cards at the end, there's hubs on them, you add them to that list. This starts to become like this is one of the core practices in marketing, and it is absolutely the core practice in touring, is you always write down the hubs. Every hub there is, you write it down, and you put it into a list, and then you forget about it. You put it in the list, you make any notes you need to make about it in the spreadsheet, and forget about it until the next time you're in that, or, you know, thinking about marketing to that town. But then you've got it. This is like everything. This is thousands of dollars in your pocket. All these different lists, but especially the hubs list. It's so big. It's so big. Yeah, I hope that makes sense. Because these hubs are the people you invite to the party. These hubs are people who can help you spread the word. These hubs are people who can reach out to and say, hey, who else do I talk to in town? Who are the other hubs? And you start to do this research. And it is heavy lifting. It's a lot of work to figure out the hubs database. And you start to get a sense why I'm saying pick three cities. You know, if you're really wanting to tour, pick three. Don't pick 20. Could imagine trying to do this hubs list for 20 cities. It gets so daunting and overwhelming. But three is like, you can do it. That's really manageable. I mean, maybe five, that's okay. But just know that every city you add, it starts to get a little less, a little more unwieldy. Yeah. So I hope that makes sense. The person that has the best databases for touring wins. I can't tell you how many touring musicians I see who come through town, and it kills me. They do a show. They don't invite people to give their emails as a minimum. They don't, you know, even though they know there are hubs, they don't have any of these lists. They don't have texting lists. And for musicians, that would be sweet and super pearl. Hey, we're coming through town next week. Come to our show. You know, they get a monster response on that. Here's the link. Go buy the tickets. And a lot of musicians, of course, don't also sell tickets in advance, which I think they should, on, you know, Eventbrite or something like that, or some ticketing service. But they don't have any list. They don't have an email list. They haven't organized their Facebook, you know, so they into friends list, so they would know who are their friends in that town, which is nuts, because I've seen them. They get into town. They're like, oh, yeah, we should call this person and tell them we're in town tonight. I'm like, you didn't already tell them? You're just leaving it to chance? So I see this a lot. Very rare that musicians have this together, and very rare that most people who tour workshops really have this together. It's like somebody says, hey, you should come. They say, great. And then they go, and then they don't. Because they don't have any intention of going back, perhaps, or they're just kind of winging it or freestyling it, they don't keep track of this stuff. And keeping track of the hubs and organizing your email list, your social media lists, your texting list, and this hubs list makes all the difference. Yeah. So that's a big thing. That's kind of the mother load of this. Yeah. And so if you have questions, Victoria's got a question about her phone. obviously I'm not there and I can't see your phone, but you almost certainly have a friend in your life who's that techie nerdy friend you always call. So if you have technical questions about any of these things, and again, genuinely, most teenagers in your life can help you with all of these things. They'll know what a Google spreadsheet is. They'll know how to create a list on the phone, probably. They'll probably know something about the Facebook friends lists, you know, or some social media friend of yours will. But this is the thing to get handled. This is like these are the baskets, you know, that hold you while you're traveling. I want to talk a little bit about pay what you can as a strategy, because this is something I've used. I'm not going to go deep into it because this is, again, I'm going to write a whole ebook about this at some point. So pay what you can as a strategy works really well for me for day-long workshops. Again, I think for me it works really well because I'm talking about money and marketing, and so that just makes it easier. But it's not something to throw out. You know, this idea, and I do it where it's for a day-long workshop. There's a $25 deposit, and then people pay me whatever they want to pay on top of that at the end of the workshop. You know, so I'm not necessarily saying jump into it without maybe talking to me more. But to know that pay what you can be really useful in touring works really well for me because the whole hippie crowd is just very – they love this idea of pay what you can. It's right in alignment with the values, which makes it more likely that they're going to spread the word. You don't have to, but it is an option. Okay, so let's talk about finding local hubs. Because finding them is, I mean, we've talked about a few ways. One is you could just email the local hubs that you know and ask them. So the first time I went to Victoria to do a workshop, I'd never been to Victoria doing a workshop before, and I really knew almost nobody. So I emailed the one person I knew who would probably know folks, my friend Jackie Kanyek. I said, Jackie, who do I talk to in town? I'm coming to town with this workshop. I don't know. And she was like, these are the 15 people. And she sent me an email. God bless her. It must have taken her half an hour. 15 people, their name, their email, and a little bit about them. So then I sent them all an email. Yeah, and I'll talk a bit about the kind of emails to send. But yeah, so that's one way. You email somebody you know in town, and they send you a list of people, or you get on the phone with them and you go over the list together. Another way is at the workshops. You ask people, who do I talk to, and they'll give you people as well. Another way is you can just email your list, your whole list, or if you can segment it, that's great, but you can say, hey, I'm thinking about coming to this town. Is there anyone who'd like to bring me in, who'd like to host me, you know, in the workshop? And you'll get responses, and then you just sort of suss out who you think is the best fit based on size of their list, their group they're following, how enthusiastic they are, have they done this before. You can also post on Facebook and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing a workshop in this town. Who should I talk to? Who are the best hubs? And tag all the people you know who live in that town, which, of course, is where these friends lists are real handy to just remind you of who you know in those places. You could also search online because, you know, if you're doing a very niche kind of workshop, you know, like Wayne Roberts, he said he's doing all these local food things. So real easy. Then he's like, I want to go to Helsinki or wherever it is. You know, then he's like, Helsinki, local food. And the hubs will appear. And then you just start to reach out to those hubs directly. And you can also search meetup.com is a great way because there are already groups. There's already these lists of people who are getting together. And you can send a message to the administrators of those meetup groups, and they'll often be really good contacts too. So that's where you can start to find them. Let's talk about working with local hubs, and we're going to talk about promo tools, and we're going to talk about what to do in between visits. I'm just going to give some random tips that I think are really handy, and then we'll get to your questions. Okay, so working with local hubs. So, yeah, you get this list of hubs. Great. What the hell do you do with it? The way you reach out to hubs matters because if you get this list of hubs and then they just get a mass email from you and that's all they ever get from you, it's actually a bit of a turnoff and you're probably going to turn those hubs off. If the first thing they get from you, even though it's a personal email, is like, hey, I'm coming to town. This person said to reach out to you. Here's the info. Can you spread the word? It's also not the best. So what I suggest is a two-step approach. And that two-step approach is you send a first email that does not have any info for them to spread, and a second email with the info. The first email is basically the courting. It's the you know, invitation. And in fact, if you go to what is the blog post? This will be eventually in my ebook that I create on hub marketing. But let me see if I've got it. Yes, okay. So I'm just going to post this at the top in the group. It's a whole blog post I wrote about how to approach Hub. So I'm not going to go into it in detail because it's already here. And there it is posted on top. But basically, the first email would say, so when Jackie told me about these people in Victoria, I send them an email and say, hey, just reaching out because Jackie said you're somebody who might, you know, I'm coming to Victoria, I'm leading these marketing workshops for green, local, holistic kind of businesses, and she thought you might have some ideas about where I could spread the word. I know you're probably really busy. Any help is warmly appreciated. I just don't know a lot of folks in this town. That was all it said. It didn't have a link to the workshop. It didn't have a big promo. I didn't ask them to do anything in terms of promoting it. But almost all of them responded, and almost all of them said, hey, give me the info, and I'll spread the word about it. So notice what happened there. I let them be generous. I didn't demand anything from them. It's a very gracious approach where you give them the room to make the offer in the first place. I might still have asked them if they didn't offer, but it gives them the space to do it. And because I was referred by somebody, they're like, well, Jackie says it's good. It must be good. I'm happy to spread the word. That's how it works. And even if I'm reaching out to hubs I already know, you know, the emails, I sent out like 50 emails yesterday, and the first one was basically like, hey, I'm coming to Toronto to lead some workshops this weekend. I could use a hand spreading the word. I left things a little late in the game, it seems. I was wondering if you might be able to post something on Facebook and tag some good folks and include something or include something in an email. No pressure on this. I'm sure you're swamped with a million things, and any help is warmly appreciated. If you're able, of course, I can send some pre-written things, and I'm also open to any ideas you might have about other places to spread the word. Also, I'm planning another party on the evening of September 14th. I'll keep you posted, but save the date if you're able. I hope you're well. I hope all is well with you and yours. So that was the first email, and I would, you know, edit it, tailor it a little bit, depending on who it was going towards. But I sent it personally to all those people. It wasn't a group email. Then if they replied, I had a template ready to go, which said, thank you so much. So grateful. I know our days are full with so many things. Below is a pre-written Facebook post. Edit as you like. If you could post it and tag three people you think it might be a fit for, I'd be so deeply grateful. And then there's a pre-written Facebook post for them. And this is big. When you're touring and you're asking hubs to spread the word, you have to give them the tools, pre-written things to spread the word. Yeah. And of course, you know, when you're sending these one-on-one, you just edit it and tinker with it to make it as, you know, personalized as is relevant. So that two-step approach is something I recommend ideally. You're not always going to have time to do it. Whether it's a new hub or an existing hub, in a desperate thing, you can just send an email and you can say, look, I'm desperate. Nobody signed up. Could you please post this? I'm just so swamped for time. And, you know, people will understand. But better to individually reach out, because then you also get to hear from people personally, and it's a nice way to catch up quickly. And because the emails are pre-written, it doesn't take that long, actually. Again, so that's one way to reach out to hubs. Now, if you've got somebody who's playing more the role of a host or really taking on promoting you, especially in a first visit, I think it's good to pay them money, you know, to split the money, unless they've got some other, you know, incentive. But, yeah, when I went to England, Saul got half the money on that first trip. When I brought in Rob and Michelle from Verge Permaculture, their pitch was, hey, just we'll split the money 50-50, just pay our gas for us to get there. And actually, so the first one, they said, you keep all the money and just pay us our gas, because they were trying to promote their permaculture design certifications, their big two-week program. So there was that. But then the next time, I was like, hey, just 50-50, you know, let's take half, you take half, easy. You're going to have a lot more motivated hubs if they're going to be your core contact, if they've got some financial skin in the game. It's just a fact. You know, if they're sitting there being like, oh, should I do another post? Should I send another email? It's worth it. I'm, you know, going to make some money for it. They will, or they're more likely to. I think if somebody's going to host you, it's really good to have a clear written agreement. I don't always do this, but I think it is a good idea, especially around the money. Because, you know, I've had it where somebody, like, hosted an event, but everyone who came to the event was from me. Like, nobody had come from that hub, and they still wanted to be paid per person. They're like, but I hosted it, and you said $25 per person. I said, yeah, $25 per person that you bring. Not $25 per person just because you created a Facebook event that none of your friends responded to, you know. So good to have those agreements very clear of, you know, and what if they heard about it from your list and that person's list? What then? To make sure that's all very clear for you. And make it easy for them to spread the word. Again, pre-written Facebook posts. Give them pre-written tweets if they're going to be hosting you to spread the word. Give them posters that they can put up, et cetera. Something that's also important, if you have people who are being hubs for you and organizers, is to be cheering them on as the people are registering for the event. Ideally, it's like, especially in the beginning, every time somebody signs up, just forward the link to them, like, hey, this person just signed up for their workshop. It just encourages them. When that happens, they start getting this groove, which has them more excited to promote it and spread the word. Yeah. So those are some thoughts in terms of working with hubs. So now I want to talk about some of the promo tools that you have, that are options when you're touring. So one is Facebook ads. I'm not a Facebook ad genius, but I'll just say that they are there. And you can create an ad for your workshop. I wouldn't do it for a weekend workshop, for an intro or a day-long, if it's paid as you can, where it's low barrier of entry. I think it can be great. And you can target it to a very particular group of people in a very particular geography based on interests. Again, I'm not going to go into it. You can Google how to do Facebook ads, and you'll immediately find 10 articles that tell you how to do it and how to do it really well. So that's something you can do. Facebook events are big. The challenge is, we all know it. People don't check their Facebook events very much. So I would never, ever try to do a tour based on Facebook events, but I would probably never do a tour without them. Because it's so easy for people to invite their friends on Facebook events. When you post a Facebook event, Facebook gives it a higher ranking, in the news feeds. It's just very handy. And you can, create the event, invite all your friends from that friends list, from that city, and they all know about it. Not all of them will see it, but it's there. And one of the things you can be doing, by the way, with the Facebook event is just every day or so put another update in of some kind. Here's a video. Here's a quote. Here's a thought. Here's I'm really excited about this event. Hey, there's only this many seats left. You can do the countdowns of how many seats there are. And this is something I talk about in the Art of the Full House. But it's a good way to use events. And that'll have it more likely that people see it. But not everyone's going to see it. You've got your email list. You've got the Hubs database. You've got posters. I would not write off posters. posters put in the right place, you're going to get some folks for your workshops and talks from that. And then, of course, Eventbrite or whatever online ticket sales thing. I use Eventbrite. I think it's the best one. I've looked at a lot of the other ones. I'm biased. I really like that one. It allows you to sell the tickets in advance, not just hope people are going to show up. It allows you to email the people afterwards, download their email. It's just, I love it. And also Eventbrite has its own internal calendar. And a lot of people use this where they'll just see like, oh, what's happening on Eventbrite? And they'll look at that as a local events listing. And I've had people come to events and they just saw it on Eventbrite. They weren't on any of my lists. I'd had no contact with them. Okay, so I just want to talk about some tips, some little nuggets of wisdom gained over the years. Again, start small. Start with the three cities. Work them really hard. Expand slowly. Number two, if you're going away for a long time, you can rent out your home or leave it to a friend in need is a really wonderful thing. Like, I'm going on a trip, and my two artist friends are in town for the Fringe, and they just get to stay at my place while I'm away for free, And then I have another friend, Sophie, who's back from England, and she's still trying to find a place to stay, so... From yeah, August 22nd through September 18th, she's just going to be taking care of my house, you know, and I get to help a friend in need. I've also done it where I've been on longer trips, and I just actually rented out for a month to a friend. I just put on Facebook, and somebody responds, or 3 months, and I just sublet it in that way. Or you could put it on Airbnb, you know, have a friend take care of it. Lots of, so you could be making money from your house while you're gone, which is good to know. There's a great thing called Tracker I want to recommend, T-R-A-C-K-R. It's a little thing, little widget, circular widget you can put on your keys or in your bags that allows you to keep track of them. There's an app on your phone. It'll tell you where those things are. And when you're traveling, man, losing a bag, it's no good. Sometimes you don't have a lot of time. Whether your passport is in it, there's a lot of precious stuff. So this app, you can put it in your wallet. You can put it on your keys. You can put it in all of your bags, in your jacket pocket. And you can have one for each thing, and you can identify which little widget is for which thing. But then if you're like, oh, my God, I can't find my bag, you can use that app, and it'll tell you the last place it was. Or if it's within 100 feet, it'll tell you where it is. And the best part is also you can set it up so that you can click a button on that and it will make your phone ring. Or you can set it up that if it gets separated from the trackers or for certain ones, that it'll put an alarm off on your phone to let you know you've left something behind. So for traveling, my God, I just recommend it. I also recommend getting some sort of anti-theft something on your laptop. There's a great app or program called Hidden. H-I-D-D-E-N, Hidden. And so if you Google Hidden Anti-Theft Computer, I'm not sure if it's just for Macs, but what it'll do is it's a computer, it's a program on your computer and also on your phone. And let's say you realize, oh, my God, my laptop's been stolen. It's not just missing. It's been stolen. You can log online, log into your Hidden account, register it as missing, and what it'll do is it'll, first of all, it has a little GPS thing, so it'll help you find it, but it'll also start taking photos using the camera without the light going on every time it's used. So you can now get photos of the thief. So much more likely you're going to find it. And again, if you're traveling and you're using your laptop to organize your tour and you lose it, it's almost game over. So have something like that. It's great. Also, make sure you get a phone battery, an extra phone battery, because when you're traveling on the road, you just don't have a lot of extra time. There's some tight connections to make. You're trying to connect with people. Plans may change last minute. There's just a lot to manage. So having your phone with you is huge. And if the battery dies, you can be really hooped. You know, something, you need a cab, you got to, et cetera. So you can get external batteries you can plug in to your phone. For iPhones, there's also something called Mophie, M-O-P-H-I-E. That's a little battery pack you can put on your phone, which I've used in the past, especially the iPhone 5 because the battery is so terrible. Now I've got a 6, the battery is much better. But make sure you have an external battery when you're traveling with you. Also, I would make sure you have Uber on your phone, the app for Uber. I'd rather use a local cab company, and I get that. And there's a lot of local options where you go, and it's good to find out what those are. But frankly, Uber is a lifesaver when you're traveling because sometimes we've all had terrible experiences with cab companies. You know, just the other day, my friends called Yellow Cab in Edmonton. They said they'd be here in 10 to 15 minutes. 20 minutes later, they weren't there, and I called. They're like, oh, we don't know what happened. I guess we could send you another cab. And when you're traveling, you don't have the luxury of that kind of time always. And so sometimes just having something like Uber, if it's in that city, wow. But it's also good to ask around. What are the local other local cab companies that have apps that I could use? Vancouver has eCab, where it sources all the local cab companies. So when I'm there, I use that. I've never waited for more than 2 minutes for a cab. So that's good. Again, don't be afraid when you're touring to start small, really, just in living rooms. You know, Byron Katie, who wrote the book Loving What Is, who's doing very well financially with her empire, you know. But she started just in people's living rooms for years. People would just ask her to come and do a workshop. She'd go to the living room and do it. So go where you're invited. Keep your expenses low. Go to the places people already want you to go to and that you already want to go, you know. You can start easy with this. It doesn't have to launch into this huge thing necessarily. Teaching in other countries. So that it's not legal to do that necessarily. Every country will be different depending on your citizenship and visas and all this, but it tends not to be legal. So that's why I tend to mostly just do workshops in Canada. I could be doing a lot of workshops in the States and traveling. It's probably fine is the truth. I could probably cross the border. They're going to ask me. I could just say I'm visiting friends. But here's the reality, too. We live in a day and age where the fact that, you know, we're doing a workshop, it's not a secret online. And if they were to Google your name and then find the workshop that you're doing, bad news, because then you can be turned away. You could be banned from the country. You've just lied to a customs officer. So I still do it. You know, sometimes I'll do a workshop in other places, but I don't have any tricks on this. I wish I did. If anyone does, let me know. But for most countries, you're not allowed to make money from people in the country while you're in that country. So you can't be paid by a source, let's say, in the United States as a Canadian, and vice versa. So that's just something to be mindful of if you're wanting to do other countries, to make sure that you've got that figured out. I've gone so far as to make sure that all – I just went I asked people to delete some of the tweets and Facebook posts about my workshops and to post it after I was out of customs, you know, just because I was so paranoid or nervous. It's usually going to be fine, but good to think about. It's important when you're touring, and this isn't something I can give you any more than I can give it really for promoting events, because each event is so different. But you want to create a manual, a tour manual of systems. Like every time I tour and I go to a city, this is the checklist. This is what happens every time. And this is something I'd recommend doing right away. You know, you create your basic one. So, for example, that touring checklist could say, do I have my accommodations figured out for this city? Venue, is it booked? Do I have the local cab apps? Do I have a Hubs database? Do I have a Facebook friends list for this, a Twitter list for this city, et cetera, et cetera? You're going to figure out what that checklist is for you. Do I have all my materials for the work? Do I have a flip chart? Do I have pens? Do I have tape? Do I have name tags if I want them? Do I have a volunteer to do registration at the event? All of these things. And again, everyone runs events so differently and promotes them so differently, so it's you're going to come up with your own. But this is such a lifesaver. And one of those things that should be on that is a packing list of all the things you need to pack. It's funny. You know, I've had some of these and then lost them over the years. And just going on this tour, I sat down and was like, yeah, what do I need to pack? And I'm really grateful to myself for doing this. So it's like, oh, yeah, that right, having a scarf, right? I always forget that I need a scarf sometimes because it's cold and I'm traveling without one. You know, little things. Oh, yeah, the phone battery. I should make sure I have my phone battery packed on the list. So have checklists for your tour. And, again, you might want to do it per tour. You want per city. You might want to have just checklists for the whole tour. But have those kind of systems. Cause, and then as you're going through it, keep improving them. Keep making notes on it. And once you're done the tour, go back through the system and rework it. Any challenges that you had in the tour can almost always be fixed by some checklist or system. This is where having an assistant is so huge to help, even part-time, somebody who can help you with your tour, who can be managing you through the system, because I just find touring so overwhelming sometimes. So somebody can be like, have you done this? Have you done this? And make sure those things happen. Like, is there a Facebook event created for this? Did we create an Eventbrite for this? Have we emailed the list about this? You know, have we done a targeted email just to that city's list? Those kind of questions. Because it's not, you know, even though everyone's events are different, for your event, it's going to be fairly predictable every time you go on tour. So creating those lists, really important. And very important to have some sort of a system, a to-do managing system, to manage all your to-dos that works for you. The one I recommend most is called Things. It's only on Macs. It's the website is culturedcode.com. So culture with a D at the end, culturedcode.com. And it's got it's just the best. It's so simple. But there's a lot of, you know, tools that people use to manage their to-dos. But when you're touring, there are so many things that you need to get done. And some of them you're going to need to do on Thursday, but maybe another one on Friday, then another one next week, and there's a bunch today. And to be able to organize them by the date, but also to be able to organize them by the project they relate to with the tour, or the fact that they're all just related to the tour, is really important. So if you're just a disorganized person, you tend to wing it. That shit falls apart on the road fast. And it doesn't just cost you, it costs everyone who's bringing you in. So being organized, there's an obligation, I think, to all the people who are supporting your tour to be as organized as possible. So that's it. That's all my thoughts, everybody. So I want to invite everyone who's still on the call to just take a couple of minutes right now. Take some deep breaths. That's a lot of content. And just reflect. So actually, let's take 3 minutes because you may want to get up and stretch. You know, grab a glass of water. Just take care of yourself. And I'm going to post in the group, and we'll just give – actually, let's give 5 minutes for this, for questions to come. But I'll post this comment here. It just says, comment below, what questions do you have? So you can type them in right away. But we're going to take 5 minutes right now, so you can just really sit with it and sit with what you've heard. And, like, what are the holes here? Where do you need help? Where do you need some more clarity? Like, I'm happy to stick around as long as we need to get your questions answered on this. So it's like, what's the question? It's like, man, if I leave this call without some satisfying answer to this question or some guidance or some direction, this is not going to be useful for me. What are those questions? So we're going to take 5 minutes and enjoy. About 2 more minutes. one minute. So again, I'm happy to stick around and answer any questions. I want to make sure this call is useful for you. So we've got questions from Ross and Kalita. Let's keep the questions under the, you'll see it pinned at the top. It says comment below, what questions do you have? So let's keep all the questions there so we can keep track. Take 30 more seconds. So again, if you've written your question somewhere else, let's just keep it in this. You can put it in that thread. I want to make sure that I don't miss any. Sometimes people post questions in other places. And at the very top of the group, if you refresh the page, it'll say comment below. What questions do you have? Put all our questions there. Okay. Okay, so let's dig in. Feel free to add questions as we go through if what I say brings up more questions. Okay, so a quick one. Victoria was saying, did you say you use both things and cultured code for to-do management? It's the same thing. If you go to culturedcode.com, that is things, basically. Their website name could be clearer. Okay, let's go to the top. So Ross was saying, question, I struggle with lists and data. Is there a way to work around this or another model that you've come across that compensates or negates the list-making skill, or do I just need to suck it up? Good question. Yeah, you don't need to. If somebody's going to bring you in and organize everything and do it all for you, then you don't need a list at all. You could just roll that way. Somebody says, I want to bring you in, you say, great. And you just say, and you're just satisfied with however many they bring. If you're really cool with that, you could just have one hub per city, you know. Say, hey, do you want to bring me in? Great. And then they promote it. You don't even really think about it. Or you promote it in whatever way you can, and then you show up, and whoever's there, you work with it. You can do that too. You don't need to have all the lists then, you know. I'm sort of giving the full range of options, you know, if you really want to hustle. But that's about the only other way I could imagine doing it, because it seems to me then the other option is you go with no hubs and you just book a venue and maybe you put up some posters. But even then, you know, it's still hubs. It's still lists of, like, where do I put up the posters? But to just go and put up posters and do some Facebook ads, I don't know if that's the most solid way to promote it. I think there's other things that you could do that would be more effective. So those are my thoughts. Ross also asked, what kind of lead time do I need to set and deliver a workshop in a city I don't live? What's the ideal time frame? Good question. I would say, for this tour that I'm doing, I'm just so far behind. I would say ideally you want 6 weeks that you announce it. Like 6 weeks before the workshop, the word is out that it's happening. Could be a little earlier, but 6 weeks is probably the minimum amount of time ideally I'd really want to give. just so that people can notice it, you know, because they may not see it in the first email. They may miss the Facebook event for a while. It may not sort of show up again for a bit. Yeah, and give them time to hear about it from multiple people, et cetera, to think about it. So I'd say 6 weeks. And then in terms of hubs, I'd give yourself 3 months lead time. You know, so 6 weeks before that, you're reaching out to the hubs. Or sooner. You know, the reality is hubs are so busy. The bigger a hub is, the busier they're going to be. And so if you reach out to a hub and you're like, a week before, you're like, hey, can you help me spread the word? They're just not as excited about it. Because they may not even see that email or be able to get to it for 2 weeks. So more lead time is better. So I would say 3 months for hubs to know, 6 weeks to promote it. Yeah, I certainly would not do any sooner than a week. Like, to try to do it with like a week's heads up, it's just, which is what I'm almost doing in Toronto for this tour, for the first workshops. It's just madness. It's crazy. It's a little stressful. So, Ross also said, my dream tour is a no set destination tour around North America and later Europe, with tour spots evolving as I go. Evening and one-day workshops, living room, or wherever I get invited or arrange, doing family constellation work for people I fit with. 4-plus people would make a location viable. Thoughts or advice on this? Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I'd start with is just, who do you already know? Who are in some of these places you'd like to visit? And start with some general sense, you know, to begin with. And then have that as the basis, and then as you're touring, you know, you'll probably get a sense. So if you just want to do it totally intuitively, then you say, well, maybe I want to go to this city, I want to go to this city. But then while you're in that town, just start asking around, who should I talk to in this city? And reach out to some of those people, and maybe one of them would want to set something up for you. It's not the most solid approach in terms of packing things. I mean, the numbers are small, so it could be fine. And, you know, honestly, that could be one of those things where you just show up in a town, you go to a cool hangout spot, and you meet some people, and it just happens. It could be like that. Sounds like an adventure. Sounds like fun. I wouldn't build a marketing strategy around that per se. Yeah, but sometimes that does happen. As long as you're open to it, you're asking and say, hey, I'm thinking about going to the city. Is there anyone I should talk to who might want to bring me in? They do a personal reaching out because they've got such a good connection with you. Suddenly you've got something a couple nights later, 3 nights later in that city. That can happen, you know. And then it's just kind of relying on good fortune, which can go either way. Okay, Buffy was saying, any tips on how to research venues that aren't too moldy, don't have new construction, et cetera, as my clients have health-related issues to the environment? Good question. You know, I don't know if I've got any tips about that, but I would just be, you add that to your checklist of what you need in a venue. So then you do the outreach. You know, you can just put on Facebook, say, hey, what are the best venues in this city? You tag everyone you know who lives in that city. They start tagging people. You email everyone you know. You start to compile a list. And that's just you send them an email and say, hey, I'm looking at venues. First of all, is this date available? If it is, are you moldy? Are you new construction? You know, just here's the needs of my clients. Do you think this would be a fit? And you can ask them directly. That's the only thing I could say to think of. Laren was saying, what's the first step in finding hubs or people if you don't already have contacts in the city? So I went over this already. But to recap, so first of all, just where do you already know people? If you're not sure what the places are, you can start with that. Like, where do I already know people? What cities do I already have really good connections? People might want to bring me in. And this could be sometimes where you just take a few hours and you sit down and you scroll through Facebook. You're like, who are these people? Which of these people might want to bring me in? And then later you look at what cities they're in. Could do that. Or you could email your whole list and say, hey, I'm thinking about going to these three cities. Who do you know? And you ask them and you'll get email responses back. You start to build your hubs database that way. Another one is you post on Facebook. You say, hey, I'm thinking about going to these three cities. Who do you know? and tag everyone you know in those three cities or surrounding areas. And there's that. You can search online, again, for hubs that might be related to your work. Or you can search meetup groups in that city and then reach out to the organizers. So those are the things I would say. Valerie was saying, on average, how much time would you spend per city? So this is 100% a stylistic choice, I think, of how you want to do it. The truth is, the more time you spend in a city, the deeper connection. So I mean, it's like Valerie I met, you know, when I was in Toronto. And there are a few times where I spent like a month in Toronto doing a bunch of workshops. But then, of course, because I'm there, I'm getting invited to social events. And I'm meeting people, I'm just having more time with folks, building deeper relationships. And so I've got a very solid base in Toronto as a result of that time that I put in. Versus if you kind of, you know, like a lot of musicians kind of come in, do a gig and leave. And a lot of workshop people come in, they'll do the gig and they'll leave the next day. That's not going to build as deep a relationship. So it's, you know, it's everything. You could be there for a year, you know, to just overnight. And there's just going to be the choice of how much time do you have, et cetera. But this is also, again, why I'm coming back to this, like, pick three places, you know, rather than just touring everywhere or building your strategy around that. To build, have, like, if you're going to build a lot of your income on touring, pick three places and work those deeper, you know, or five or seven, but, like, not 30, you know. Because if it's 30, you can't spend... Are you going to spend a week in every city? Some people want that. I mean, if that's the lifestyle you want, it's like, I just want to be on the road and not have a home and be in a new place every week and spend a week or two in that place, sweet. That's great, you know. But the longer you spend there, the deeper roots you're going to build. So there's no – and it's probably an exponential – I don't know. There's probably a bell curve on that. There's probably a point where it peaks out and then diminishing returns, you know. Yeah, so when I did Halifax, I was there for a month, and I did the 9 intros, and I filled the 2 weekend workshops with 40 people. So that was great. And it's funny, when I've gone back to Halifax and emailed the list and done a lot of the same things, I've gotten a very small response years later. So this is also part of something to think about, is how often do you go back? And it depends how big the city is. If it's a small town, don't go back more than once a year. You know, because there's just not enough of a base, probably. But also, if you wait like 3 years to go back to a town, people have forgotten who you are. They've moved on. They found somebody else they're excited about. There's a lot of kind of rebooting stuff. So to me, it's like if you can go once a year to a place, in bigger cities, maybe you can do a bit more often. But once a year feels very solid. You know, to hit a place up. Because then it becomes an annual thing. It becomes a tradition. People get to know you. You get to, you know, ensconce yourself a bit in that community. But, yeah, so I don't know. How long do you spend? I say a week is good if you can do it. But you can't always, you know. That's how it goes. But I'd say especially when you're beginning in those three cities, the more time you can spend in them, the better. Like, if you can spend a month here, a month there, and a month there in those three cities, you're set for coming back because you're going to know by the end of those months who those people are, the hubs. You're going to have much deeper connections with the people you've done the workshops with. Maybe you'll throw a surprise workshop as a part of it for all those people, you know. It's going to go much better. So in the beginning, probably more time, and then you don't need to spend that much time later. Kalita was saying, I missed what you recommend for the third visit to a city after planting the seed, tending the garden. Yeah, so that's the enjoying the fruits of your labors. That third visit is just a pleasure. If you've got your systems down, you know, logistically, if you've got your lists attended to, man, the third time you go back, it's just like, hey, everyone, I'm coming back. You have a party. You host a weekend workshop. You have coffee with people. You do fewer intros, but you do bigger ones. It's just an easier deal. That third one is like, and the fourth one, oh my God, it's so easy. You know, every time you go back, a little bit easier. All right. All Okay, so Buffy was saying, since you do this a lot, do you have any rough ballpark figures of upfront costs for each of the three workshop categories? I know each scenario is different, but can you give us something broad to think about and consider? Yeah, well, of course, you want the expenses to be as low as possible when you're touring. So the major expense is going to be the venue. So for sure, and I didn't talk about this, but good to talk about venues, you know, don't not hotels. They're so expensive. Dear God. Think about churches, community halls. There are co-working spaces. There are yoga studios. There are a lot of places that you can, you know, you just want to ask around in those towns, you know, what's the best venue that meets the criteria that you have for it that's as affordable as possible. For me, I don't want to spend more than $200 a day, ideally, for a venue. It's not worth it. But there's some venues you can do for free, or you can do a trade with them. You know, you could say, hey, if you host it, you can send X number of people to the workshop to participate for free. Or you could be like, hey, if you promote it, you can get this much money, but part of the deal is you give the venue for free, and then you get a cut or something like that. So it depends what the expenses are. I mean, are you printing workbooks, and are we including travel and accommodations in the expenses of it? But, yeah, you do want to keep it as low as possible. And it's also, it depends, you know, because it depends what you're offering at the back end. If you're just doing the workshop and that's it, you're not offering a coaching program or a weekend follow-up or one-on-one work, and there's not some concerted, focused offer being made, then the expenses need to be a lot lower. But if you know that a certain percentage of people are going to sign up for these higher-end things, it's less of an issue, yeah. But the venue is the major one for expenses in touring, and you can often get it free. With some savvy negotiating. So that's something to think about. Okay, Victoria said... Valerie said, by what criteria do you decide to offer $25 per participant or 50-50 split with the organizer? Good question. I don't know if I've got a well-thought-out thought on that. Except to say that the more money that the host makes, the more incentivized they're going to be to spread the word. So for that first one where it's 50-50, I was walking and being like, basically, I don't know anybody in the UK. And Saul knows a lot of people. So we can pretty much assume that most of the people in the workshop are going to be from him, not from me. So let's just make it very simple and easy, 50-50 split, which is a huge incentive for him to spread the word because he knows, like, man, I'm going to make £50 for every person that signs up, you know. So, and so that would be another way of saying it. I could just say, hey, you get £50 for every person versus 50-50 split. And we did 50-50 of profit, by the way. That's important. It wasn't just revenue. It was like, okay, once we count the venue, which gave him also an incentive to find an affordable venue because he made more money on it. Yeah. So... So the 50-50 is like if you have a core organizer, I guess, somebody who's doing all the legwork, promoting the event, they're booking the venue, they're bringing you in. I think that's fair. But let's say you've got a bunch of hubs, they're like, hey, can we get a cut? You know, that's where you start saying, okay, I'll give you X percent of person who comes from you. You know, and you can qualify that to be like, they've got to be somebody who's not already on my email list, somebody who's new, who's from you. I'll give you X amount of money, $25, $50. And again, I mean, $25 is just the number I came up with. But let's say you've got, you know that people are going to be, a certain percent are going to sign up for like this $10,000 program that you're offering. Maybe you say $50 a person who shows up because you know that a certain percentage of them are going to turn into it and it's worth incentivizing them. You know, so if I go to a yoga studio and say, hey, do you want to host my workshop? And they say, yeah, sure. Well, what's in it for us? And you say, well, I'll rent your space. There's no incentive for them in that to spread the word. It's like, great, you already paid us. You could do a 50-50 split, or you could say, look, it's an intro, and what I'm really trying to do is fill up this weekend workshop. So you keep all the money as the host. You keep 100% of it, and I'll do the intro. And they're going to be even more incentivized to spread the word about it because you know you're actually going to make the money on the back end. On the offer that you make at the end, on them coming to the weekend workshop. That's how I did it for years. Well, in terms of like, I just did free workshops, but I could have charged and given it to the host. So that. Am I an introvert or an extrovert? I'm a bit of an ambivert, it's called. I'm in the middle. But I lean introvert, probably. More. I can perform extrovert very well, but I tend to lean introvert. I tend to like smaller groups, smaller conversations. But I'm kind of in the middle. So Valerie's wondering, could an introvert succeed with this form or like this form of touring? I don't know. I think it could be very hard on an introvert. You could probably do it, but you would need to really set some boundaries, you know, of like during meal times, I'm alone. You know, you probably wouldn't want to stay with people. You'd want to Airbnb it. So you'd stay by yourself. You have that space to just decompress after the workshop. Make sure you have your meals alone or just with one person that you care about. So there's probably ways you can do it that you could make it work for you. And so, Laren, you're saying the hub emails, 1 and 2, you're wanting to see them. So that blog post that I shared has a ton of these, a lot of examples of what those are for a whole bunch of different situations. So where did that post go? Here it is. So I'll just post this as a comment under your question. Yeah. And Sarah was saying, so I want to build hubs and tour workshops in local regional areas that I would return to more often than annually as a means of additional income and growing a tribe in those towns. Does the model you've described work for that scenario as well, or how would it be different? Well, I think you just have to – it depends how big, because I don't know the population of these places. I'm just saying when the town is really tiny, it's harder to return unless you're bringing a new level workshop. But then, of course, it's not going to be all the people who went to your intro are going to go, you know, that first level. It's like maybe half of those are going to sign up for the second level. Maybe half of those will sign up for the next level, if that. So it's just good to be mindful of how big the town is. So I would tend to say focus on 3 big ones just because it's easier. But this could absolutely work in terms of just smaller towns, local, regional, touring around. And again, I'd be really – the thing is to be thoughtful about it, to be systematic about it. Like, okay, there are these 10 cities locally, regionally. I'm going to be touring. Here are the cities. And you map out, okay, what are the venues that I use in all those cities? That's probably not too hard to do. And you get that all worked out. Who are the hubs in those cities, the major ones who are going to bring me in? And then you proceed from there, you know. And you're just mindful of how often you go back to the well and what you're going back with. If you went, you know, let's say 3 times a year, and in the first third of the year you went with this intro workshop, second third you did the level 2, next one level 3, and you did that, you could probably repeat that, you know, as long as you could, you know, and you may find it sort of dries up. The other thing to say, too, with hubs is, the first time you go to a new town, you can and should rely almost entirely on the local hubs. By the third time you're there, you don't need to. Like the third time I did a workshop in England, because I love Saul, I still invited him to promote it, and I still gave him like £25 per person who came. But I didn't need him anymore. I had enough of a list and a reputation and a base that I didn't need a local hub. And you may find that at a certain point you need to go back and get a hub again, you know, because you're needing some new people, some fresh blood in the list, because it's stagnant. People have already, everyone on your list has already gone through your stuff. So much of this depends on how many workshops do you have? What are you going back with? Do you have a really good sequence? You know, level 1 workshop, level 2, level 3. I don't really particularly have that myself. It'd be good if I did, that you can go back with. You know, and are you keeping track of who's in which workshops? You can reach out to them. All of that plays in. All right. And I see a question from Wayne here. How important is it to offer a way for people to make money or to take concrete advantage from the theme you're speaking of? What if you're weak in that area? How do you compensate? Well, it depends. Okay, so you talk about local food. So I'm sort of getting the sense that maybe what you're wondering is, like, if you're giving an inspiring talk about local food, you know, and just like sustainability and that kind of thing, but it's not targeted towards here's how to grow food and save money, that kind of a talk, but it's more just the bigger theme. How does that work? You know, the reality is people are going to be more drawn to something where there's this self-serving immediate benefit, where it solves a direct immediate problem. People probably be more interested in like how to grow food at home and cut your food budget by a third than a permaculture 101 is my guess in terms of themes. It depends how hot permaculture is in that town at the time, I guess. So people are going to be more drawn to something that is a little more, that solves a problem, that gives them a particular result that they're really craving than a talk on a theme. Just a general, like, to go and talk about love, you know, and relationships is not going to be as compelling as something with a real focus thing. So this is in the art of the Full House. I go into this and I give a list of names of workshops so you can even see ones that, you know, I think are strong names and one that are weak. And there's a lot of ones that are very generic, and I just don't imagine they pull a huge response. If there is a response, it's not from the name. It's not from the focus of the workshop. So much of touring to me is having a workshop that's like, this is a good workshop to tour. You know, it's like if you're doing a fringe tour, it's with a play, it's good to have a play that you know is solid, that's your intro into the community. And then the next year you can come back with your weird artsy one. But good to start with something solid, something that is like a sellable thing that people would want to go to, a workshop that, is going to have some sort of draw. So to like look at your people and be like, what is the biggest problem they have that they can't solve? What's the thing they're craving that they don't know how to get? And to, you know, have a talk like that. And then from there, you could say, I'm coming back and I'm going to do this talk and it's about bigger themes that we got into here and, you know, you can develop a following that way. But having said all that, if you have a very broad theme thing, but you have a good hub who could fill the room for you, it could be great. If you've got somebody who, you know, is willing and able to do that, why not? Man. It's just to me what works. And so much of touring is you start to notice the response. Like, okay, which workshops get a response? What cities seem to really like me? And do I get a good response from? Et cetera. Okay, Kalita was asking. I really enjoy going deep with a small group and giving lots of individual attention, even for the intro work, but realize it could be better to hold large groups for the intro workshops and then scale down and down to smaller groups for more intensive offerings like retreats. This may fall more into how to design the offering, not the scope of this course, I know. If there's a question in the here or it inspires a response, yay. If not, it's okay. Yeah. I think the first time you go, it's probably the main thing is to do those intros to reach people. And whether that's doing a lot of little living room things, because that's what's going to work, or there's one hub that can bring you in and you can do a big, I mean, that's the ideal. You just may not know exactly who those hubs are to start with. Though, I mean, but you can do this research before you get to it down, you know, all those things I was saying. You can just, like, do the research and reach out and build a relationship online. And they may agree to host you just from what they see online. Sometimes you're going to need to meet in person, build that relationship before they're willing to do it. But, yeah, if you can have somebody come and you can have, like, 100 people at an intro, that's way easier and better than doing a ton of small little workshops. So if you can arrange it, I would. Sometimes it's just difficult to. It's a tortoise versus the hare on this one, you know. The quick thing is, you know, a lot of little things are just real easy to set up. It just takes more time. Of course, it's smaller and it's more intimate, and, you know, there's an advantage to that in terms of the following that you build and the loyalty that you'll get from that, which it sounds like you've already discovered. So it's always going to be the width versus depth question. And, you know, I would just say sales funnel-wise, it's probably a lot easier to do the width to begin with, just to expose people, to give them a taste so they can say, is this a fit for me or not? Would I want to explore more or not? That's ideal. But, yeah, you know, I mean, when I went to England, I did a number of smaller intros front, and they, you know, filled up the workshop. Mostly Saul filled it. But yeah, if I go back again to the UK, which I hope to, then there are three or four major hubs there who I think could host events that would have like 100 people. So I'll just do those. I'm not going to do a bunch of small intros. I'll just do those. But, you know, it wasn't until the second or third visit that I actually figured out who those hubs were and met them and built a relationship. I don't believe reaching out over email would have been quite as successful. You know, because part of what happens is you go to these towns, you do work with enough people, and then these hubs who are sometimes hidden hear about you. And they hear about you from enough people, they're like, man, I should meet them. You know, and that happened to me in the UK, and it's happened in other places too. All right. I think that's all the questions. We did really well, everybody. That was 2.5 hours. Yeah, it seems like that's all the questions. Nobody else has added anything. I really appreciate you joining in. I hope this was useful. I'm going to be compiling all of this into a product. It'll be a little more polished. You know, I'll get it transcribed and then polished, and I'll add in some of these templates and things. And you'll all get a copy of that because you were here and you helped me create it, so you're all going to get a copy. So not so much a recording per se, but there will be a copy of that, a little bit polished. And, yeah, I'm just so grateful for you for helping me do this. And it's exciting. This is something that, of course, I've thought a lot about, but I haven't had a lot of chances to talk about it, even though I've got so much experience with it directly and indirectly. And it's a pleasure to be able to share it with some people who can appreciate it and who can ask really good questions. And I really hope that you'll keep me posted in terms of how your tours go, what you learn, et cetera. Yeah, it'd be really wonderful to hear from you. And may you go to those three cities and be well received in those three cities. And may you build a really wonderful, loyal following and be ensconced into the community of those places so that you have a little pieces of your heart in all those places. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll post the recording in this group after, but there will be the, more importantly, there'll be the polished thing in a couple of months. And also, by the way, if you would be willing, something that'd be incredibly useful for me is if you'd be willing to write a testimonial. Because I'm going to be selling this program, and so to get some testimonials from people would be really helpful for me in terms of the sales letter, obviously. So you can put that just at the very top of the group, and if you could post a testimonial there, I'd be grateful. So I think that's it. Thank you so much again, and hopefully we'll see you when I'm on tour. Maybe one day in a city of yours, or I'll see you in another online program. Take care. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.